Hi, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to episode 112 of Awards Chatter, the Hollywood Reporter's Awards podcast. I'm the host, Scott Feinberg, and my guest today is someone who I first interviewed back in January 2011, shortly after she had turned 14 years old and shortly before she received an invitation to the Academy Awards as the ninth youngest person ever nominated for the Best Supporting Actress Oscar for her incredible big screen debut in the Coen Brothers film True Grit. Her name is Hailee Steinfeld. She just turned 20, and over the 6 years since I last sat down with her, she has continued to distinguish herself in movies like John Carney's Begin Again, Elizabeth Banks's Pitch Perfect 2, and most recently, Kelly Fermon Craig's feature directorial debut, The Edge of 17, for which she's received rave reviews and now a Best Actress in a Musical or Comedy Golden Globe Award nomination. Oh, and she's also now a music star, having released her debut album, Haze, in November 2015, and accumulated friends and fans including Taylor Swift and Justin Bieber, while, unlike some of her peers in the public eye, avoiding any whiff of scandal and remaining, by all accounts, a true professional and class act. Over the course of our conversation, Steinfeld and I talk about how she first discovered acting and wound up with such a big first role. How her Oscar nomination opened up a lot of doors for her and forced her to figure out what sort of a performer she wanted to be moving forward. How singing emerged as a huge passion, thanks in part to her roles in Begin Again and Pitch Perfect 2. And how she managed to create a rare three-dimensional movie teenager so magnificently in The Edge of 17. So, without further ado, let's go to that conversation. Hailee, thank you so much for doing this.
Of course.
It's good to see you 6 years after the last time.
Crazy.
But anyway, we always begin, I guess, just by saying, where were you born and raised, and what did your folks do or do they do for a living?
I was born and raised in Los Angeles, California. Yes. I was born in Tarzana, to be exact, and I've grown up here my whole life. My mom grew up here, and she is an interior designer. Yes. Although I've kind of taken her away from that the last couple of years because she's been on the road with me.
Yes.
And my dad is a personal fitness trainer and sports nutritionist.
Very nice. Now, if I remember correctly, this all kind of started because you were like 8 years old and you saw somebody you knew doing something. Can you refresh my memory of how you got into this?
Yeah, so I was around 8 years old, and I distinctly remember sort of up until that point, I had been trying so many different things, different types of dance. I was basketball one week, tennis another week, horseback riding the next. It was always a different thing, and my parents would invest in the three-month trial, buy all the gear, buy all of the everything and the everything I needed to succeed in whatever it was I wanted to do, and a week into it, I would be over it. And I started sort of, I guess, finding different inspirations that were pulling me into the acting world, so to speak. Mm-hmm. One of them being my cousin was doing commercials, and I would sit at the TV and watch the channel that the commercial was supposedly playing on and just sit there until it would come up. And I remember seeing her face on my TV, feeling like it was the most massive thing I'd ever seen in my life. And I ran into my parents' office and said, I want to be in commercials. And that's sort of where it started. I saw a family friend of ours in a school play, and yeah, I don't know, just little things here and there sort of pulling me in.
So what do you do about that? How do you then go and say turn, you know, the desire into actually getting the ball rolling on your own stuff?
So my unbelievable mother, who I would not be here without, she did just hours and hours of research. And she obviously knew it required a lot more of a commitment than I was used to. And so she and my dad came back to me and said, if this is something you're serious about, take acting classes for a full year and we'll see how it goes. And I was like, all right, done. A year went by faster than I could have ever imagined. I went from taking the class, I was eight, say it was 8 to 10 year olds, and 10 to 12, 12 to 18. I was in the 12 to 18 class by the end of the year. I absolutely loved every single minute of it. It felt like I found where I was meant to be. And I think the reason I sort of knew that so young was because here I was bouncing around all of these different things on different sides of the cities, and then mom was driving everywhere and I was doing all these different things all the time. And here I am in one place doing all of those different things.
Yeah.
And I finally just, I just fell in love with it. And a year went by after taking classes. I had headshots taken sent them out to 10 different agencies. Two called back. One of them was a print agency, Coast to Coast, and I was with them on the print side for a year, and my agent there, Tana Loy, at the time, took me over to the theatrical side.
So print meaning you would be in, like, ads and magazines or things like that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And once you had across-the-board representation with them, what starts happening? You start going out for a lot of other different kinds of things, right?
Yes. So I started during that sort of year where I was not, like, fully represented, I guess you could say. I was doing student thesis graduate films, which were, I mean, the stories I have from those, thinking now that, I mean, I would be, if I were in film school, doing that sort of that same thing this time in my life, having been the star of students' films. It's pretty crazy to look back on. But those were definitely a start to where I am now.
And were there things like what had gotten you into this? Were you doing commercials as well, or any of those other kinds of things?
Yes, I was doing commercials. I did a few guest starring roles on sitcoms, and then just years of auditioning until True Grit.
So before we hit True Grit, I've got to ask you, how was the regular side of your life throughout this? Were you still going to school with regular kids, or did it become a sit where that was not possible and you had to be homeschooled? Or what was non-work life like for you as you approached True Grit period?
I was in school. I started homeschooling right before True Grit, and that was due to scheduling. And I realized that a school environment, I guess, is not for everyone, and it was not for me. I never really thrived socially, I guess you could say. And I felt like, you know, I felt like I was just on a different sort of page than everybody else. And it took me a long time to figure out what page that was and why I was on it. But it was just a different one. So I started homeschooling right before then.
Let me ask you, just because it relates to what we're going to eventually get to with your most recent movie, was it just a matter of not connecting with other kids, or were other kids being mean girls and mean boys and whatever?
It was both. The most confusing part of it all was trying to realize and convince myself that I wasn't the only one that they were, I guess, picking on, for lack of a better word. I would come home and I would complain to my parents and I would be upset and I would have things to say, but I never wanted anybody to do anything to fix the situation, because not only did I feel like nothing would ever help, I didn't ever want people to think that I was, you know, the victim of anything. I knew that there were kids that were doing it to everybody, and at times I would take certain emotions out on people and not mean it, mm-hmm. and not know how to apologize or not know how to handle it. But yeah, I think it was both sort of not feeling connected, and then there being sort of, you know, those kids that are just trying to find who they are too.
Yeah. So how did you first hear the phrase True Grit? I mean, what was the beginning? Somebody calls up and says, we have an audition, or we think you'd be right for something, or what was the beginning?
So my mom's cousin has a daughter who's a few years younger than me, and she called my mom saying, I just heard this casting call. I think she heard it either on TV or on the radio or somewhere crazy. And she said her daughter didn't necessarily fit the breakdown because she seemed too young, but she was passing along the information to my mom, thinking that maybe I would be right. So it was right before, like, a winter break that everybody was about to be out of the office for. And I remember my mom called my agent and said, what's the deal with this? What's, you know, how can we get in on this? And they're like, oh, I think they found their girl. She's in Texas. Well, if we get back from break and they haven't found her, we'll look into it, whatever. The sides were posted online. So I went and took advantage of that. I started working on the material in hopes that I would get a call when they came back from break. If not, I would put myself on tape. Mm-hmm. And so by the time everybody got back from break, I had an audition and I was so prepared. And I went in there and less than a month later found myself on that set.
Did you go and watch the original movie? I know that the movie that you did is more inspired by the book.
Sure.
But maybe you didn't even know that at the time, right?
Right. Well, I was very lucky to have that film to look to as a reference for the language and for the time. I had no other sort of, I guess, access to that sort of research. I wasn't learning about any of that in school yet. I wasn't exposed to any of it. So luckily I had that film that I could watch 2-3 times for the sake of the dialogue. That was probably the number one thing. And then I remember I watched it a few times without sound because I didn't want to get stuck in the pattern of how she spoke. But I was able to sort of pick up on the physicality of the role and just, I guess, overall, it's a Western and it's a different period. So I was lucky to have that to reference.
And so when you do now go in, it's initially for the casting director?
Yes. Ellen Chenoweth, I went in for the first time. No, I went in for her assistant the first time. Really? I didn't even see her.
Okay.
And then the second time I read with her. And then the third time, it was with Jeff Bridges, Barry Pepper, and the Coen brothers.
And this was all within, a 1 month period.
Yeah.
So as this was happening, were you aware of the fact that there were thousands of other girls that were pursuing this? Were you aware of what a big deal this would be if it happened? Because I can't imagine you'd seen too many Coen Brothers movies at that point. They're all like R-rated.
Sure.
So what did you know and how excited or not were you going through this?
I was aware of the fact that they were seeing thousands of girls. That, or at least that's what was being said.
Yeah.
So I was aware of that. And I had seen a couple Coen Brothers films, but I definitely became more aware of who they were after and during my time with them. But I guess I sort of had this feeling when I was reading the sides, when I was reading through the script, and not to sort of change the subject, but I got this feeling with The Edge of 17 that I don't feel I've had since True Grit. And that was reading these lines and feeling like I in no way can picture anyone else doing this but me. And with True Grit, I remember it feeling like this is a lot. But that was the initial reaction. And then once I was in it, it never felt like anything. And I remember sort of being on set and even in the audition, the Coen brothers are sitting there sort of laughing. And I'm thinking to myself, this isn't supposed to be funny. Like, what are they laughing at? And I just remember sort of watching it then and feeling like so much of the comedy is in this character feeling like it's just nothing.
Right,
you know?
Right. Well, so let's just recount for people. You had to deliver some very specific, unusual sort of dialogue. You had to ride a horse, you had to climb a tree, you had to roll a cigarette, list goes on, all while still studying with a tutor on the set, right?
Yes.
So was the making of this movie fun or was it just kind of a blur?
No, oh my goodness, no. There was never a dull moment. It was it was like working two full-time jobs, going from being on set, working every single second, then the second you're off, you're in school just so they can count that 20-minute block.
Right.
But yeah, it was crazy. But again, never a dull moment.
Did you ever get a chance to meet Kim Darby, who had played your part in the original?
I did. So I met her at our screening of the movie, which was amazing. Because again, I'd spent so much time watching her and sort of studying her. And then I was able to, in ways, take what she did and make it my own. So to meet her was really, really special.
So the movie comes out, gets great reception, bunch of Oscar nominations, including Best Picture and Best Supporting Actress for you. How cool was all of that? Even just seeing yourself on the big screen must have been, it's a new experience. So basically the initial reaction and then what happened afterwards? How much did this and how quickly did this open up other opportunities?
Well, the experience altogether, I'm still trying to find the words to describe it. I'll never forget seeing the movie for the first time with my family. It was just my family. And it was this moment. I just remember I started to cry after the movie. And I was so confused as to why. I was like, I should be happy right now, but I'm so emotional. My brother's crying. I've never seen him cry. My dad, my mom. It was just this whole, realization of like, this is it. Mm-hmm. This is what I've always ever wanted to do, and it's right here on screen, and it's done with the most incredible people, and I've just been given the all-time masterclass, and I don't know where I go from here.
Well, because we should say you are now shortly after that the ninth youngest person ever to get nominated for Best Supporting Actress.
Right.
You were only 14 and like just barely 14.
Right?
Did that aspect of it where people, you know, all right, so you have this emotional thing, you've seen the movie. Now, not only have you done it, but people are saying you've done it extremely well and made a big impression, and then you get that kind of recognition. What was that like to process?
I mean, again, I'm still trying to process it. I guess going to work every day with the people that I worked with on that movie taught me I don't even know that they were aware that they were really teaching me this. It was never really a matter of a piece of advice they'd given me. It was the fact that I was able to watch these guys come to work every single day and put just 210% of themselves into this role and have the most fun doing it. And then they go home to their families, they come home, they go to work, and they do the same thing again. And to see that it's about the work and it's about the craft and it's about making it the absolute best it could be, to be recognized for that is so incredibly rewarding. and I guess, I don't know, it's something you never think about when you're in it. And I don't know, I guess I just, I owe so much to the people around me for bringing out with me what they did.
And so next thing is now you're, people know who you are in the business, certainly, and they are your hot commodity. People want to work with you. I heard that you're getting all kinds of things. I've heard at one time The Hunger Games was one of the things. Did you audition for that?
I did audition for The Hunger Games.
Was that one that you were excited about?
Oh, man, yes. Yeah. that was, yeah, I wanted that for sure. I remember going through that and feeling like, you know, one thing too, I had just sort of joined social media around that time. And it was so interesting to see sort of how that affected the whole process. Because with True Grit, I had none of that, right. Nor do I think that would have ever affected anything.
So how did it affect the process?
It was interesting to see fans creating trailers on YouTube of me in the movie or of other people
as
that they thought
Katniss
in the movie.
Or whatever.
Yes, Katniss Everdeen. Or like polls as to who they would vote in. Right. You know, it was just, it was crazy. And at one point it was kind of cool and motivating. And at the other time I was like, damn, like this is
a little crazy.
Yeah, it is. But yeah, it was a great process. I mean, it's an unbelievable series and nobody could have done it better than her.
So what was the first project that came about as a result of True Grit that you were really excited about? What was the first direct follow?
Romeo and Juliet. A year went by after I made True Grit for a couple of reasons. Mm-hmm. I think it took me half the year to sort of come down off the whole experience. Yeah. And then, you know, deciding on the next project was definitely a conscious decision.
Yeah, because it's going to set the tone, right?
Exactly. And Romeo and Juliet was something that I felt I sort of watched come together from before I got involved to then obviously the final product. And with True Grit, I sort of walked in the 11th hour. Right. And then, I mean, I just kind of did my thing and walked away and didn't have to worry about anything. And with this, it was a completely different experience in that I really felt sort of, I wouldn't say more connected to it, but just more sort of involved, which was interesting.
And so it kind of was built around you in the sense that, first we should say this was adapted by Julian Fellowes, he's been on this podcast, people know him from Downton mm-hmm. Abbey. So he sees True Grit, he loves your work in this, and now he says, I want to do Romeo and Juliet specifically with you. Is that how that part, he just offered it basically?
Yes, which is crazy. And I remember thinking like, it, you know, this feels like the one. I mean, it's been a while now and this feels like a decision. This feels like something that is completely challenging and terrifying, to be honest. I remember reading it and feeling like, okay, this is a script that had a couple X's through some pages. But yeah, it had great people involved and it felt like something that was slightly impossible in the beginning and something I could say felt impossible in the beginning once it was done.
It's a big one to take on. And then the other one, which I would guess chronologically wasn't that long after, is one that I love so much and I think people need to keep discovering it, hopefully Begin Again, which at the time you signed on to it was still Can a Song Save Your Life, right?
Absolutely.
Now, this may be the first time that most people ever saw you in any context related to music.
Correct.
Was that the draw for you or what appealed to you about that part?
So with Can a Song Save Your Life, with Begin Again, the music aspect was a huge draw for me. Music has always been part of my plan and it's always been something I've wanted to do. And it's really always sort of been a matter of how am I going to do this in a way that makes sense? And I had always hoped that it would happen through a movie somehow so that could be the sort of sly introduction.
Yeah, organic, yeah.
Right. And with this movie, it felt like that. It wasn't sort of overbearing in any way. It wasn't a full-on musical. It wasn't overwhelming. It was an amazing story that is just raw and real and organic and has, I mean, incredible people involved. The story was awesome. Mark Ruffalo playing his daughter was like, yeah, for sure. And yeah, that it turned out to be one of my favorite movies I've ever worked on.
So great. And by the way, speaking of not rushing into the music thing in a weird way, your character didn't even want to accompany him, right? As I remember. So it was like the reluctant star of that. So
exactly.
Ender's Game, was that the first really big movie?
Yes,
big
it was.
Studio movie?
That was the third film I ever made. So after Romeo and Juliet, which, it was the first big studio.
And what was that like? Was that an adjustment? I mean, I guess True Grit, it feels like a big movie, but that was not a huge budget, no. right? And then Romeo and Juliet was probably pretty
yes.
indie. yeah. And Can a Song Save Your Life certainly was indie, Begin Again. So what is it like to for the first time, step into a big studio apparatus and deal with all of that?
I mean, having gone from the complete opposite, really, to that, it's a lot. It's overwhelming, for sure. There's a lot of people and so much more time, which is crazy. I remember when I got the Day of Days for Romeo and Juliet, it was something absurd. And I remember thinking, like, I don't know how anyone's going to do this, let alone me. Yeah. And then once we finished the film, I was like, why does anybody need to make a movie for longer than 12 days, right. you know? And then with Ender's Game, I was like, 3 months? That's crazy. But yeah, it was great. It was, you know, there were a lot of people involved. But to make a story that big sort of come to life with an amazing studio behind you is the only way to do it. And it was a great experience.
Does your acting approach change depending on the size of the movie or the type of, like, obviously the type of movie it might, but is it a broader type of acting versus grittier type of acting when you're doing a studio movie versus some of these indies where it's more grounded in realism and all of that?
I guess on paper it might be. My approach, I don't feel, changes too much. I love to dig just as deep regardless of the size of the role or the size of the movie. That doesn't change for me, at least I don't feel like it has. But I guess in some ways when you have a film like True Grit where you're playing a character that is scripted on every page, and then you're in a movie like Ender's Game where you're one of 10 and everybody has a voice, everybody has a message, you choose how to sort of make yours known mm-hmm. in terms of, you know, levels. But I wouldn't say my approach is too different.
Yeah. Just going to touch on a couple more before we get to Edge of 17, because who knows when along the line people discovered you. It might have been, for instance, with 3 Days to Kill, where you, Kevin Costner, there's that, I think one of the nicest scenes is you learning to him teaching you how to dance.
Yes.
Just what was any takeaway from that?
That, oh my God, we shot that movie in Paris, and that alone was one of the best experiences of my life. And that was a story I fell in love with because I really felt like this character sort of, I'm trying to think back on it. The character I played really had just a beautiful trajectory, going from feeling like completely misunderstood to then realizing that, like, the only reason why I'm misunderstood is because I'm not allowing anybody to understand me. And she realizes that and lets this her father into her life. And there is that beautiful scene where he's teaching her how to dance. And it's just, I don't know. There's just a lot of wonderful moments in that movie. McG directed that, and he was just so awesome and so...
How could he not be with a name like that?
I mean, true, but so verbal through the whole process. Yeah.
Holmesman, was that a little bit intimidating to be not only acting with, but also directed by Tommy Lee Jones?
Oh my God, yes. A little. Yeah. That was crazy. I actually shot like one day, so I came right in, I did my thing, and I left, and I was part of me was like, this is the way to do it, because that way I don't have time to get nervous. I literally just have a couple lines, get in and get out. A side note, a lot of the crew that worked on True Grit was on The Homesman.
Really?
So that was really fun.
Cool.
But
is
yeah,
because it shot in the same area, or what was the reason for that?
Just no, I guess just coincidental.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, wasn't shot in the same place. But there's a scene, the only scene with Tommy Lee Jones, where I'm sitting next to him on a small bench.
Yeah.
And I remember we sort of... Well, I believe we were like running it when we were filming it. And I was prepared, but I just kind of was a little bit more relaxed than I think I would have been if I knew that we were doing it for real. And we're doing the scene and he's looking at me across the bench. And I'm like, okay, pretty sure I said all my lines. I don't know why you're just still staring at me. He's still staring at me. He goes, all right, cut. And I'm like, oh my God, sweating. It was just so nerve-wracking. But to be in a scene with somebody, it was like he was waiting to sort of check out and you know, go back to behind the camera.
So probably your biggest audience for a movie would have been Pitch Perfect 2.
Mm.
So you had known about but not been a part of Pitch Perfect,
yes.
right? Were you a fan? Was this your kind of movie?
Oh my God, totally. I remember watching that movie feeling like if there is ever another movie like this, I have to do it. Again, the music being a huge draw. And just the fact that it was a movie that, you know, I went and saw it with my parents. I loved it. They loved it. It was just a movie for everybody. And it was, you know, one of those feel-good film. So
how does it come about that Elizabeth Banks, with her version now, is directing, and and you get to be a part of this. Were they, what was the first sign that this was even possible?
I was in Atlanta actually making a film, and I got a call from my agent saying that they're making a Pitch Perfect 2. And at that point, there was no word if there was even a part for me, but it was out. So
did they know that you were a singer?
No, not at that point.
Wow.
But I had heard that they were making everybody sing in the audition, and they had the first time around. And that, like, at that point when I heard that, I was like, no way, there's no way, I can't do that. I've never sang in front of anybody. I'm not going to do that. But then at the same time, I was like, but then again, I'll do whatever I can to make it work. And I got a call from my agent saying, Elizabeth wants you to audition over Skype. And I was like, oh my God, like, that's got to be so awkward. Like, what if you lose connection in the middle of a scene, or like it freezes, or who am I supposed to read with? Right. Like, that's so weird. So I begged them to just wait. I think I had a week left of this film I was on. I was like, please just wait till I get home. I will come in. I will sing. I will dance. I will do whatever you want me to do. And they waited for me. And I went in. And in the meantime, I had sent them music that I'd recorded myself that nobody had heard, so that I could convince them that I was good enough.
Yeah.
And I went in, I read. And that happened like a couple weeks later. I was part of the Bellas.
What was the highlight of the making of the movie? Just seems like the characters obviously become close. Did it feel like that? I mean, there aren't that many movies with that many young women who are the center of the show. So was that kind of special?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that movie had more women involved than all of the other movies I've done put together, which of course is a highlight. Elizabeth Banks directing was absolutely amazing. She obviously, the first one was her baby. The second one was even more so. And I don't know. I think looking at your schedule every day, your call sheet, sort of seeing what you have to go to work and do on that movie, it's like, how does anyone call this work?
Yeah.
It's absolutely just so much fun. Every single minute of every day, you're doing something you never thought you'd ever do. So there were quite a few highlights.
Flashlight, this was a great song in the movie that you then covered separately, right? Or
yes.
Was that, how did, okay, it worked like that. And that was the first time I sat up and I was like, whoa, this is a talented singer.
Thank you.
And I just wonder, did you know that song was, did you sort of see the potential with that song? And then what did it lead to? I guess the cover then in some ways opened the doors to this second career, really, right?
Yes. So when I read the script, there was no song scripted as to what the original song of the movie was, what the song that my character wrote sounded like. And I think we were like a week or two into rehearsals, and I got this email from our musical director on the movie, and he's like, this is the song, don't tell anybody, here it is. And I literally was like sitting under a desk for whatever reason. I popped my earphones and I listened to this song, and I was like, oh my God, like, this is, it makes sense. I mean, here I've been like making up my own whatever in my head as I read through the script, because that's where the song is placed, and this is what it is. I later found out it was written by Sia and Sam Smith, which like completely changed the game for me after that. I was like, absolutely.
Right.
And then they had given it to Jesse J to sing for the soundtrack. And the original sort of demo that I heard was vocals and I think it was vocals and a piano.
Wow.
It was super simple and stripped down and beautiful. And I wanted to bring that version to life because nobody ever really had the chance to hear it like that. And I sort of went off on my own and directed a little video with my friend Pete Wentz, who played the guitar for me. And that was really the first time anybody heard me sing a full-length song. And I was about to go on, I believe, James Corden. I was in my dressing room and I was like, guys, I don't know if I should do it. It was up. It was uploaded to YouTube. All I had to click was okay. And I did it and I went on James Corden. I came back and there were all these views and comments, and it was the most overwhelming, amazing thing. And yeah, that's gotten me here.
And so you then hear from Republic?
Yes.
Republic Records? Yes.
So I had gone to an event in New York City. It was an event for Topshop. It was the opening of the store on Fifth Avenue. And Jesse J was performing at this event, and Nick Jonas, who are Republic artists. And they are represented by a man named Charlie Walk. And he was at this dinner. He was at my table. And I was sitting next to somebody who I had worked with before. And I've always feel like they kind of do that on purpose. Right? I don't know. And then it was me, then my mom, and then this guy, Charlie Walk. So we were like the first ones at this table. And my mom was sort of looking at the name tags. It was sitting next to her, and she Googled the name because We didn't know who was.
Right.
And she saw that he was from Republic Records. He worked on the first soundtrack for Pitch Perfect. So she's like, oh, that must be why, you know, whatever. So cut to like halfway through this dinner, my mom turns to me. She's like, you've got to switch with me. This guy's amazing. You need to talk to him. And I switched with her and I started playing this guy music and I literally stopped eating. I was so nervous. I was like, this guy's listening to my music at this event while people are like, this is insane. And he, without hearing me ever sing live or seeing me perform or doing anything, he signed me to the label and he just believed and he's...
It happened like that quick? Like basically shortly after that?
Shortly. Well, yes. He's a man who likes to have a lot of meetings. So we had a lot of meetings and then he signed me.
Right. And so the result is that it can't have been that long after November 2015. I don't know when that meeting happened, but November 2015, we have... this first album, which is called Haze. Why is it called Haze? H-A-I-Z.
So Haze is a nickname that really came from my fans. And I felt like if I call this EP Haze, it will, one, be as if they named it.
Yeah.
And it will, two, sort of really feel like this is something from me to them. And it was my first body of work as a musician. And it was for them. It was, and you know, inspired by them. And I mean, it's amazing to see that it does what it does because of them. So that was that.
And it came together how, I guess, in such a short amount of time. You've got, and you know, songs that very, very catchy and about all kinds of things. Yes. And, you know, what was the making of that?
It really did happen in crazy timing. I have really been sort of put on what feels like this fast track. Yeah. this last year with the music. I got into the studio with Matt Mann and Robin, these incredible producers, Julia Michaels and Justin Tranter, and we, within a few months, just knocked it all out. And everything that's done on the EP is done with those same four people, which I don't feel happens often. I guess you sort of, I don't know, when you meet people and it just works, it works. And yeah. And one thing came after the other and it soon became Haze, and now we're on to the full-length album.
And doing a lot of performing, and you're going to be... You're saying through the holidays doing some more. And one last question before we hone in here now on Edge of 17. But seems like you really enjoy the recording and the performing aspect and all of this with the music. Is there ever a chance that this would displace acting, or is it always going to live side by side?
It'll always live side by side. I am fully aware that it's not easy. And at times, you know, one is put in front of the other. But it can be done, and I'm in it right now, and I don't see myself doing one and not the other. It's crazy, though, I guess, to think sort of whenever I'm working on one, I'm completely and fully immersed in that one. But to sort of travel the world and be on different stages in front of different people every other night is one thing, and it's just this instant live reaction you don't get from making a movie, which is so, I mean, just... intoxicating and, yeah. And so hard to describe. But then again, going and stationing yourself in one place for a period of time and being able to fully lose yourself in just that one world is something completely different and equally as exhilarating. And the best part, I think, is what I'm realizing now, and that's how the two sort of coincide. When I'm in the studio and I get to pull on things that, you know, if for whatever reason I'm lacking inspiration in my personal life, I can think back on this character I played and sort of get into her head or, you know, headspace and think of how she would handle a certain situation, and vice versa. When I'm on a set and I think about music, that's sort of my number one trigger. So, yeah.
All right. So now 2016, we have a movie that's still in theaters and that people need to go and see. I was confessed to you earlier that as a male of in his 30s, I thought this is not for me. And then sure. I was nudged and I went, and it's great. This is The Edge of 17. It's Kelly Fremon Craig's first film as director. James L. Brooks, though, as the producer. Again, thousands of people apparently auditioned, I've heard.
Yeah.
And how did you hear about it?
So I actually, this is funny, I heard about this film when it was called Besties.
Okay.
And I am guilty of having judged the book by its cover, book by its title, by feeling like, you know, if this is a high school thing, I don't want to do it. Like, I'm going to be 20 in a couple years and I don't want to be doing this.
Right.
Which was so crazy for me to think. But I had heard about it. I didn't read it the first time around, and it sort of went away and resurfaced, I'd say 5-6 months later. And I read it and I
kicked myself, and I couldn't get over the fact that I would ever do that. I read it and I was like, this is why didn't anybody tell me sooner? I went in and I auditioned for Kelly and Jim. I feel like from the very first time I met Kelly, from the last time I saw her a couple days ago, our whole relationship is like this never-ending conversation. And in that happened the development of this character. And that started in the first 5 minutes that I met her. And this was a movie that I'm so incredibly proud of and fell in love with. And to have brought this character to life was really an honor.
No, that's great. Well, maybe for people who haven't yet seen it, can you give a little tease of what it's about and Yes. Who you're playing?
Yes. So The Edge of 17. Oh, my God. It is that time in your life where you're trying to find answers to questions. And those questions are, who am I and what am I good at and how and what am I supposed to do to fit in? Do I even want to fit in? Trying to answer all those questions on your own and feeling like 1 minute everything is good and great and you're happy. And then like 20 seconds later, it's the complete opposite and the world's coming to an end. This movie captures every single emotion you could possibly feel in that time in your life.
Now, for you as an actress, when you're reading the script and seeing what's going to be demanded of you here, it seems like it would be a kind of a tricky balancing act because on the one hand, you're the protagonist of the movie. We obviously, therefore, see the world through your eyes in a way. We're rooting for you. But you're not always the most likable person as this character, Nadine. So did that give you any trepidation about, like, just how am I going to play this and walk that tightrope?
Once I was in it, yes. I read it initially and felt like, hell yeah, this is awesome. This is a challenging role. She's fearless in her own way. And the story itself is just so unapologetic. And when I got into it, I was like, oh boy, okay. How am I going to climb this mountain? Because it's hard to sort of play a character that you want to sympathize with at the same time you really don't want to like.
Right.
It's complicated. It is a tightrope. But I have to thank Kelly for that, for helping me sort of get through that. I coached with Larry Moss on this project, which had been a dream of mine for years. And to have him on speed dial and be able to call this man and say, I'm struggling with this one concept. And within like 30 seconds, he would just come up with some answer, whether he felt it was right or wrong. It was right. It was just exactly what I needed to hear. And when it came to sort of walking that fine line, it was finding the balance of how to let people see and hear that this character really is fragile inside and somewhat broken, but on the outside she's really good at just pretending.
Right. The scenes with Woody Harrelson are hilarious, and I just wonder, it seems like there are a lot of young actors in this movie, which is great, but if there's somebody with kind of experience that might be able to share some wisdom or just have been fun to hang out with, it would probably be Woody Harrelson.
Yes.
What was it like working with him?
So much fun. That man kept me on my toes the entire time. Whenever Kelly knew she had what she wanted, she'd always give us a take to have fun.
Yeah.
And she would tell us we could do whatever we wanted. And when you tell that man he can do whatever he wants, he will do and say whatever he wants. And sometimes I would feel like super confident about like the improv, and I would be like, oh yeah, no worries, I got this, like whatever. He'd come out with something and I'd be like, how do I respond to that? And I would just lose it and start laughing.
Right.
But we would literally go from, we were obviously shooting at a high school, so we would be sort of in the gym playing basketball, shooting hoops in between takes, and then they'd be yelling at us to get back on set. But he truly is incredible, and to have found such impeccable timing with him in our own sort of personal banter, I really feel that came through on screen.
So the movie shows obviously how hard it can be to grow up just if you're a average regular person, but then it must be like at a different level when you're basically growing up in front of the public as a public person, well-known person, in the age of smartphones with cameras and social media, which we were talking about. And so I guess I wonder for you, has, you know, you're, as you say, you're about to exit your teens. Mm-hmm. How would you describe this, these last 6 years or whatever it is? And does any part of you ever wonder what it would have been like or yearn for, just want to be a normal kid or go to college or do whatever? Or are you feel like it's the correct path? It's just the way it worked out the way it should have.
I guess there will always be a part of me that's a little curious, but I don't feel like any other decision would have been right. Yeah. I feel like I'm meant to be doing what I'm doing. I'm so happy, and I feel so lucky to be presented with the opportunities that I am. But I guess in thinking back on the last couple years of my life, I mean, so much has happened. And it really all sort of started with True Grit. And thinking back to that time where the social media and the phones and the everything that exists now didn't really necessarily exist, at least for me, I was sort of late to that whole game. And I really feel like this movie, The Edge of 17, is a true representation of how I feel about it. I'm involved with it. I'm confused by it. And I don't understand it sometimes, but it's our world. And it's crazy to think that, you know, there was a time where, I mean, I hear my parents talk about how they'd ride their bikes in the cul-de-sac till the streetlights went out. And to think that that's like never, I mean, there was a time, there was a very short period of time in my life where that was a thing. And now it's just sort of been consumed by our world, which is not anything I think to be ashamed of. It's just, it's an interesting thing to be a part of. But it's crazy that we sort of look for validation through what's on our phones and through who's looking at what we put out. And it's something that this movie addresses, you know, with no shy approach, and it calls it like it is.
So just as a last question, I mean, where do we go from here? If we check in, hopefully it won't be a full 6 years again.
No,
but
I hope not.
If, you know, what would you like these next few years to entail? Is there any specific goal or ambition? It sounds like for a while it was, let's make a music album. Then it was playing more grown-up roles or whatever. Mm. What's your ambition for the next few years?
Well, I really can't wait to see what sort of roles come as a 20-year-old now. And then going into my 20s, I feel like that definitely changes things. I will no longer have to struggle with, like, my height and looking too old or young or any of that. I'm an adult now, and I can take on these roles that I've been dreaming of playing. So I'm looking forward to making more movies that I can be proud of and be excited about telling people and showing people. And music, of course, working on my first debut album. There's only one of those, so I'm making sure it's perfect, and I can't wait to release that. And I feel like every time I am in the studio, I'm with people that play instruments and produce music and work behind the soundboard and know how to work Pro Tools. And that is so incredibly inspiring and of interest to me. And working with somebody like Kelly and Jim, directing is something I want to do. And it's something I've been thinking about. And part of me is like, oh my God, I have this idea. Let me run with it. And then another part of me is like, okay, slow down. So there's so many things I want to do and I'm looking forward to in the next couple of years.
All right. Awesome. Well, thank you. And I can't wait to follow your next stuff.
Thank you.